Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
What's going on and welcome into today's Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek. I'm Daniel Salerson alongside my co-host Jim Meichenhofer, and what a rough night it was for the Pelicans. Unfortunately, a loss last night, 125-124, a 17-point lead. Disappeared quite quickly for New Orleans, up by that much with 6 minutes to go. But Damian Lillard did some Damian Lillard things last night with 50 points and 10 assists. We'll get into that a little bit, kind of with our topic today, and hopefully we're going to bring in a ray of sunshine to kind of help us with this cloudy day here in New Orleans. That's former Pelicans and Hornets forward Ryan Anderson. And the reason why we're bringing in Ryan today, Ryan with the Jazz hands.
I'm the ray of sunshine. I like that.
You are a ray of sunshine. We need you, Ryan. And, you know, the way we saw what we saw from Damian Lillard last night kind of got us thinking about the evolution of the three-point shot, even since, you know, the start of your career and how it's evolved over time. But first of all, how are you, Ryan? What's new with you?
I'm doing great. I'm out here in Houston. Not a whole lot of sunshine out here either today, but no, I'm enjoying it out here. We have baby number two on the way. It's a girl. I'm terrified. Just because we have a boy already and it's like, he's a bruiser. So I can't imagine just having a girl is just gonna, I'm gonna melt. So I'm excited about it. In life right now, I have a few things in the works that pretty soon I think we could talk about, but not necessarily quite yet. But next podcast, I most likely will have a new venture, which I'm really excited about. And life's good, man. I'm happy. Things are good. How are you boys? How are you boys doing?
You know, besides last night, we're doing okay here. I'm expecting baby number two as well, and it's a girl in July, and this will be my second girl. So I can give you all the advice you need for a baby girl there. Congratulations.
We need to talk after this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm super excited about it. But speaking of Damian Lillard, he does that kind of stuff, man. I mean, I bumped into him during an All-Star break. And I never really had a long conversation with him. And we kind of just bumped into each other in crossing. And he's like, you know, I hit my first game winner ever on you. And I'm like, what, Damian? Come on, man. If you look back in New Orleans, Damian's like, obviously, guys, let's just face it. I was never known to be as the best defender in the NBA, but I did have the job of trapping Damian Lillard and being the guy that's supposed to contest his deep three. But that was before he was like the buzzer beater lockdown, you know, unreal champ that he is. So, but Damian is a beast. I'm sorry about the loss, you guys. It happens.
It does happen. Again, it's kind of why we wanted to talk to you, especially how things have changed. Obviously, Do you know where you are ranked as far as three-point shooting in the NBA, as far as your all-time? Do you know how many you've made in your career? Anywhere close? Do you have a ballpark?
623. I have no idea. I've never looked that up. I don't know. It's kind of it's interesting because, you know, you obviously you have no idea. I never really knew how much I was shooting in a game until I got to Orlando, and everybody's telling me I'm shooting the most threes in the NBA and all this stuff. And I'm just playing. So when you're in the game, you're not really knowing, you know, what you're shooting. But what is it? Do you have the number?
1,325. That is 49th on the all-time list, Ryan Anderson.
Wow. Well, that's
so you are an expert exciting. When it comes to threes. And let's talk about your days in Orlando. Because we talked about this when we had you on about Stan Van Gundy, is how that was kind of the start of the three-point evolution. You had Dwight Howard and Stan in Orlando built the roster to have four shooters surrounding him and basically opening things up. Did you think that the three-point shot was going to blow up to what it has been today based on from your days in Orlando?
No. I mean, it's impossible to, you know, when I came in the league to see the evolution of where it is now, when you see almost five forward size players or five guards on the court at the same time. It was never a thing. I mean, when I first came in the league, Shaq was still playing and Yao Ming was there and obviously Dwight Howard, and the game was just even more physical and more dominant. You know, there was a system in play, and now it's just completely different. When I first came into the NBA, I was a unique player, you know, being a big guy that could shoot the ball and stretch the court. I never, you know, that was never my bread and butter. Like, shooting threes was never my game. Like, just a shooter, you know, everybody wants to just say that I'm just a three-point shooter. I mean, most of my game, my whole life in college was working out of the post, and I shot a few threes. I was never known as just a three-point guy. And then when I got to New Jersey my first year, they kind of saw the trend of that happening. And, you know, if a guy could stretch, it's funny because my latter years in the NBA, I'm seeing guys do this with centers, like coaches take centers and say, hey, let's see if you can stretch us out to the corner three now. And, you know, a guy like Robin Lopez, who I, you know, been close with my whole career. It's like, the guy was never shooting threes. And then now, you know, a few years ago, I'm seeing coaches giving him passes like I used to get passes, you know, like all around the arc, shooting deep threes, all this stuff. And I'm like, Robin was never known to be a shooter. I mean, he can make them, but it's odd, you know. It's like being a unique player, and then now every power forward was expected to shoot and make threes by the time my career was starting to come to an end. And then now it's like, what's a center? You know, you have to be a forward center now. I mean, there's really no way around it. So it's everybody shooting threes, and it, they realize, you know, it's obviously makes a huge impact in the numbers in the game. So it's a valuable thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess going into, I guess, your evolution with yourself, you know, how much was it that you just had to sit there and practice threes all the time? How do you become a three-point shooter? Is it just about the reps and just shooting them in practice? Or is this something that you say, all right, I'm going to be a three-point shooter now. I'm just going to, you know, keep working on it until I get it. How does that work, I guess, for a shooter and how he develops his game to become such a great three-point shooter?
Yeah, you know, it's 100% repetition and practice and just a want to, for me, it was a want to make an impact in the league. You know, I know my strengths and my weaknesses. I know that I was never going to come in and, you know, be in the dunk contest my first year. You know, I knew that for me, my strength lies in my skill and my ability to score the ball. But if I'm not going to be put in a position to score in the post, you know, and the coaches are telling me, you know, we're in our system, you know, we spread the court and, you know, we need you to be that guy that's shooting corner threes or whatever it is, trail in threes. It was a whole lot easier to make, to get open shots then, just because they saw the value in something unique and different, and where defenses weren't really used to it. Like, defenses never switched, you know, it was always a show, you know, there. So it would always provide an opportunity for somebody to be open. So taking advantage of those defensive systems, you know, was key in getting me to get mentally adjusted to just being mostly a shooter. So yeah, of course. I mean, coaches are telling me your opportunity is getting, you know, your opportunity lies with threes. I'm going to get in the gym and I'm going to work on threes, and I'm going to, you know, work on threes off the move and transition trail threes. And it's amazing now, man. I'm really close with Duncan Robinson, you know, with the Heat, and you see how he can just snatch the ball from a handoff and just like shoot a three faster than anybody I've ever seen. I mean, guys are finding ways to get their shots off even faster. And it's insane to see, but the game has evolved even to that now, where it's like, nobody was practicing that kind of stuff to have to get your shot up that fast. So, but yeah, I've kind of talked all over the place about that, but essentially getting work in, getting reps in, and knowing where you can fit in and make an impact, especially from a 3-point shooting standpoint.
Ryan, one of the things that you mentioned that I think is interesting is, you know, you talked about how you transitioned and evolved from a guy that played in the post to a guy that shot more outside. I think one of the things that people have discussed a lot in the last few years is that the way the game is officiated, the amount of physical contact that is allowed kind of as you get closer to the basket, it seems like a lot of teams have decided that posting up is just not efficient. And I know there's a whole discussion about analytics that can go into that, and I think that's a factor as well. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, I have a bunch of questions about kind of the direction of the game and, you know, whether you want to weigh in on some of this as far as whether it's good or bad for the NBA or for basketball. But one of the main things I was curious about, and a lot of people have talked about this lately, is especially this season, is how much is too much as far as 3-point shooting? I know Houston, I think even maybe some of the teams that you played on were the first teams to take over 50% of their shots were from 3-point range. And it seems like the way the game's going, it might be to the point in a few years where every team shoots more than half of their shots from 3-point arc. So, I mean, is there a point where you say like, okay, this is too much. There's too much, instead of the game being more diversified where you have like the best teams can post up, they can score from mid range, they can shoot threes. It seems like it's getting to the point where it's like, if you're the best 3-point shooting team in a lot of the games, you're going to win regardless of what else happens.
Jim, you're just thinking like the old school guys, you know, you just want, you miss the game. You miss the game with the center and the, no. I think the game will evolve back at some point, but not anytime soon. You know, it's trending this way. And if a team decides, oh, all of a sudden we're going to get this big slugger, you know, center, we're going to get Shaq back in the game. I mean, it's how's Shaq going to guard Joel Embiid? Or nothing to say like Shaq could never do it, but I'm just saying, we got center or Jokic, a guy who's shooting threes and can shoot mid range and play all over and pass and score. It's just a different game. Like obviously Shaq dominated in an era where you had to be big and strong, but you know, it's interesting. The game has just evolved so much. And if a team decided to change that, then they're just going to be left in the dust. So you kind of have to trend with the time. And I think, you know, my first year in Houston, one of our first meetings with D'Antoni, he said, you know, he's going on the whiteboard and he's talking about all this stuff that we, you know, future plans and goals and trying to win a championship and all this stuff. And he said, you know, we're going to shoot 53s this season. And everyone laughed. Everyone started laughing like, come on, man. You know, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm not kidding you. Like and maybe three times that season or multiple times that year, we shot over 53s. And then all of a sudden the next year that record was broken. And then the next year that record's broken, you know? So it's teams are realizing, you know, the game has become so much has become based around so much analytics, and especially a team like Houston is analytic hotspot destination, or it was with Daryl Morey, but now Daryl's branching out to Philly and they're having success. So it's like, maybe there's something there. And the amount of numbers, man, that you have to process when you play for a team like the Rockets, it's not like just go out and play basketball. It's like, no, we shoot it at this time on the clock, this, you know, if we can get this many threes up in the first 5 minutes of the game. And it's just like, there's so much more than just playing the game of basketball now, but it, you know, it's obviously working, and that's the trend. So everybody has to keep up with it.
Sure. And I think one other interesting element of what's happened in the game too, is that you mentioned, you know, Shaq, who was like a generational type player. There's obviously guys coming into the NBA that have his kind of, maybe not as big as him and maybe not exactly the frame that he has, but they're in that mold as far as just 7-footer, likes to play around the basket, that kind of thing. This is something that I think somebody on like a national level could explore more, but I think it's interesting just that there were more 7-footers in the NBA. I'd have to look this up, but I think in the 80s than there are now, partly because right. of the way that, and it seems like just defensively, that's become the issue. You talked about how tough it is to guard some of the versatile guys. And I think, you know, Shaq was even during his career, they started putting him in pick and rolls defensively. Mm-hmm. It's so much tougher. I feel like too, without going into too many specifics or whatever, we've seen guys who basically got played out of the NBA in terms of like that style, the style that they have defensively, they couldn't, it's kind of like swimming in deep water. They couldn't do it anymore. I think actually one of the guys that I've brought up in the post game radio show before was Roy Hibbert, because about maybe 8-10 years ago, he was kind of seen as like the future of the NBA at center. He was a rim protector. And then all of a sudden it was like other teams are putting lineups on the floor where you're like, who does this guy guard? So I think right. that's a really interesting element of it as well.
No question.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I mean, to a degree, you know, it affected my latter years in playing, you know, it's the power forward position, you know, with Draymond Green and the way that, you know, you saw how it evolved in Houston for me. You know, I started 50 games my second year in Houston. I get sick one day and then PJ Tucker starts and it's like, wait, what's going on? You know, no one said anything to me. Nobody, it's just the game trended that way because they needed somebody who could guard. And he was shooting 3-point shot at a pretty high clip, especially in the corner. And, you know, that's the way the game evolves. Guys do, you know, trend out. Like for me, I can keep up with the game when it's a little bit slower and more physical. I mean, I put on 20 pounds my first year in the NBA to keep up with the bigger guys. But, you know, it was easier to guard in a system like that. Now you see guys where like, you know, Milwaukee, like Giannis is playing the five. Like,
yeah,
I can't score. What am I going to do against Giannis? You know what I mean? So it's unless I shoot a three from half court, you know, so basically it's unique in that way because you have to guard, to be able to be on the court, you have to be able to guard, you have to be able to shoot, you have to be able to make some kind of an impact, but the game is it's not just a 1-5 positioning anymore. And I think the 3-point shot has a huge part to do with that. But also, I mean, the game, everybody's switching now. So the game to eliminate easier 3-point shots. So like everyone is switching. So would you rather have a guy like PJ Tucker playing the five and switching, or a guy like Roy Hibbert playing the five and switching, you know? So,
right.
So it's, you know, the evolution. I was just listening to something recently where offense is just getting so good in the NBA now, and players are just so talented and figuring out how to break down defenses so much now that defense is just like so far behind the offensive game. You know, there's no defensive scheme that all of a sudden is going to stop what's going on right now. That's why guys are scoring at a higher clip than ever. And so it's just interesting. It's definitely interesting, but 3-point shot has a lot to do with all of that. The reason why guys are switching is because of the three, you know? Yep.
you mentioned that your counteracting strategy against Giannis would be to shoot from half court threes.
Absolutely.
I was wondering, how much did you see the increase of guys practicing 35 footers and 40 footers? How much did you see that change during your career and in recent years? I mean, I remember when coaches would probably bench people immediately if they took a shot from that far back behind the line. But now you see guys that can make that. I mean, how have you seen that kind of change over the years?
You know, obviously Steph was doing it, Damian, they were all doing it a long time ago, but it wasn't really a big conversation point. It was just like, oh, these guys can do it. It's insane what they're doing. So not taking tons of credit or anything, but Eric Gordon and I, you know, my first and second year in Houston, you know, it was like this crazy thing Eric and I were doing, the way people were talking to us. We were shooting from the logo. We were never shooting even a foot past the three-point line. We were shooting deep threes. And the reason for that was to give the best offensive player in the NBA the most space possible. Guys weren't just leaving Eric and I out to have wide open threes either. So, I mean, the more guys hugging up on you and trying to keep you away from getting the ball, you know, at times it would even be frustrating. You know, I'd get three shots in a game and no one's saying, oh, Ryan, great job with your spacing. You know, they're just saying, this guy can't score a bucket. It's like, no, that's a part of the system. There's a reason we're winning games. And, you know, it's interesting. It's like that became a huge part of my value later on in my career, was just being a guy that can knock down shots and guys didn't want to leave open. So, you know, just standing there was kind of like a part of the job, and had a ton of value. And I'd hear it from the coaches and everybody, but, you know, obviously fans and people don't understand that aspect of the game, but spacing is huge. Spacing is the biggest part of the game now, you know?
Well, they have a stat pretty much for everything. So maybe you needed like some kind of spacing stat, like, hey, Ryan averaged 9.6 feet behind the 3-point line. And we need to come up with a better way to market it than standing there.
This is what it is. I'll give it to you. Obviously the Rockets were pretty popular in China before certain things happened. Like a few of the players got nicknames. So like me, Eric, and James got a nick. We had like this nickname going around for each of us. I forget what James and Eric's were, but they were like pretty cool sounding, you know, they were like real good names.
Yeah.
And mine, obviously, like, you know, the Black Mamba, Kobe stuff is big. So I'm the Standing Still Mamba. That's what they call me in China, the Standing Still Mamba. I'm like, whatever, man. Give me a name, that's awesome. But it's like, great, you know, I'm the coolest guy just standing there on the court.
Yeah, I don't know if that works on a t-shirt quite as well as Black Mamba or, you know, marketing stuff. But, you know, hey, if it sounds like a compliment, I think. So
the Mamba mentality for standing.
Mamba mentality. I had that Mamba mentality out there, baby. You better believe it. You better believe it. Standing out there on the logo, hands straight up, Mamba mentality.
Ryan, before I go back to Daniel, I wanted to kind of ask you just a few questions about certain ideas that people have floated in terms of changes that they would consider or like to make to the 3-point shot. Now, I preface this by saying that it sounds like you're not a big fan of the idea that they need to change things. It sounds like you're okay with the way that the game is headed and that kind of thing. But I'll throw them out to you anyways and see what you think.
Who are these people, Jim?
I would say podcasters, people that talk about basketball all the time, like different things.
So tons of credibility for these people.
I mean, if it's not this podcast, there's not a lot of credibility, but nonetheless.
This is the only credible podcast. Go on.
I think the number one idea that people have come up with in terms of like there's too many three-pointers shot. We need to do something about this, is to make the line deeper.
Okay.
To add, you know, like a couple feet or maybe a few feet to the line. What do you, what's your opinion of that, and what impact do you think that would make?
Have you, how many times have you gone out there and shot an NBA three? Like Jim, you yourself.
Jim's a sharpshooter.
A good amount. I mean, it's hard.
This is why I asked. Do you think that it's like a pretty easy?
No.
Especially from like that. Like
the actual line? You mean the actual NBA line?
The actual NBA line. It's
very difficult.
There's moments when I've like stepped away for a few months from the game and I come back and I'm shooting and I'm like, well, I got to get my, I got to get my stuff back to get my stamina back. Like it's far, man. And guys make it look so easy now. It's Steph makes it look, and Damian, but like Steph makes it look so easy. Like it looks like he's shooting a layup and he's not this massive guy or this super strong dude. He just knows how to work his entire body into his shot. He's not just shooting with his arms, like to where it's so in rhythm and so fast that it's like effortless. It's kind of amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. It is amazing. So no, I don't think you should move the three-point line back just for the sheer fact that like nobody is going to do what Steph, and like there's guys that can sort of do that, but nobody's going to be able to do that kind of stuff. I can't see somebody else doing what Steph is doing.
Sure.
You know,
I know we're running low on time, so I'll speed through a couple.
You guys are still on that plan, huh? The Pelicans still haven't given you that hour long budget.
Your pleas didn't work, but
apparently we're not as credible as we think we are, because we have to earn it still. The extra hour we have to earn.
We need to do something scandalous. Let's do something real. Let's just go viral right now, Jim. Take your shirt off, Jim.
Oh boy, that'll crash the whole thing. That'll end the podcast. And I once in a blue moon I'll go out and shoot five threes from the five different spots. Mm. Usually I make like eight or nine, but that's no defense, that's no pressure, that's no time. But anyways, right.
Okay, Jim.
Another also a Fisher Price hoop.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say, okay, Jim, gas yourself up a little bit, Jim.
My brother played D2. He can probably make like 15 consistently. The average person has no idea the difference in shooting range. Like some people say, hey, a guy shoots an 18 footer, why can't he just take two steps back and shoot the same shot? It's like, that's not the same shot.
No, it's not the same shot, and it has to be. Yeah, maybe. Okay, keep going, because I actually was going to throw out some ideas.
The other two quick ones, ideas that people have are getting rid of corner threes in terms of like just making the line extend out to the side, because you know how it kind of cuts in, mm-hmm. so that you can actually get your feet in, another idea that I can't believe someone suggested was shorter line. Because it would mean that the defense doesn't have to rotate as far. But anyways, those are the two.
My question to you guys is, why do you think are people getting tired of the way the game is played now? Like, why do you think people want this to be? Do you think because it looks too easy now, or why?
I just think it's that people think that it's too much based on three-point shooting, like winning or losing. I mean, that would be the quickest way that I would explain it.
It's interesting because it's like, in any business or anything in any part of the world, you're going to do what you can possibly do to produce the most out of what you have. And with basketball, obviously 3 points is more than 2 points. Like if you want to win a game, you're going to have to do it that way. And I think teams really, I mean, Golden State changed the trend of everything with the way that they played and kind of having, you know, David Lee, you saw with David Lee, like David Lee was one of the biggest players in the NBA and All-star, and then all of a sudden, you know, obviously he gets hurt, nothing against him, but like Draymond steps in, and you would have never thought Draymond Green was going to be what Draymond Green is. I mean, and he changed and pivoted roles, and that sort of shift, and then they win. They obviously, you win championships, everybody, it's so funny to me. Like, this actually was kind of some big beef amongst a few guys that I played with, you know, over the years. But like, one team wins and then every team trends towards that team rather than like, hey, look at what we have. You know, there were so many teams that I played on where it's like, look at what we have. If we keep building this, sure. Guys don't want to build anymore. Team organizations don't want to build anymore. They want to win now. That's right. Why you see all-star teams. That's why you see Blake Griffin's going to, or is he going to Brooklyn? Is this?
Yeah, he's in Brooklyn. There. He's in Brooklyn.
Yep. Okay, he's in Brooklyn. This is how much I'm keeping up with current news. Whatever. The point is, like, come on, man. Look at that squad. Are you kidding me? Like, you would have thought with AD and LeBron, that's enough. But now you got, it's like, there's, I don't know. That point to that point, Jim, I'm not frustrated about the game. I like the way the game is. I think it's fun. It's fast paced. But now it's like, this is getting out of hand with, it's literally like somebody's behind the remote of a video game putting together the dream squad now. And that's how you win, you know, but. Yeah, that's my only frustration in this world of basketball, I think.
My quick synopsis too, just to be clear, is
very quick, please.
Yes. I don't think fans, or me personally, I have no problem with teams trying to do whatever they can to win. I think more of the discussion about the 3-point game is how do we get it so that it's not overtaking everything else. Mm. I have zero issues. I'll do whatever it takes if I'm a team to win. So if that means taking 110 threes in a game and that's the best way to win, I'm never going to complain about that. I just think it's more of just an overall for the game issue.
But you just said it, Jim. You just said it. You know, that's why everyone's doing it, because everybody just wants to win and keep up with the times. You know, of course I miss the game the way it was and the old school style of play. And, you know, I grew up watching that. I love it. We all did. But this is the way it is now, man. And it's, if you really look at it, it's pretty amazing what these guys are doing.
Certainly is.
Even though Damian did it on you guys last time. Yeah. Sorry.
Maybe we should have the Rock and Jock 4-point play, like back in the day when they played the celebrity basketball games. Just 4-point spot, 10-point spot at half court.
I mean, okay with that. Give them a 4-point shot. Why don't we do a 4-pointer?
There we go. We've solved all our problems, MTV Rock and Jock style. But anyways, Ryan, I really appreciate the time. Maybe the next time we talk, we will get the Zoom premium here so we can talk a little bit longer. But we will catch up with you. We'll catch up with you when your new venture, you know, when you release the news, we'll have you on. But this was a really great conversation. I really appreciate it. Best of luck with you and your family and the baby girl number 2. I'll text you some advice here in a little bit. For baby girl number 2, but I really appreciate it. Good catching up with you again.
Great talking to you guys. Appreciate it, fellas.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right, we'll be back at the end of the week for one more Pelicans podcast. We appreciate you listening to the Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek.